Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. My name is Bob Griswold, but first I want to say something. CCTA is a 501c3 organization, and based on that, we cannot endorse individual candidates, but that doesn't mean we can't bring them on and have them speak with us and tell us their positions and everything. So folks, we won't, as an organization, endorse people, but we will bring on whoever we can. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Pat Park.
Charlie Loferno.
Julie Loferno.
Very good. And now we also have a guest coming on. Bobby, you're the guest.
I'm the guest. This is State Senator Bobby Hannig.
Very good, Bob. Thank you, Bobby Hannig. Thank you for being available to talk with us. And we do have a last minute person coming in. Glenn Fink is coming in, and so we're going to have a full crew. And Bobby, can you give us a quick introduction to Senator Hannig? Can you give us a quick introduction to yourself?
Sure. So I'm State Senator Bobby Hannig. I'm serving in my second term as state senator for the District 1 State Senate District. Prior to that, I served two terms in the North Carolina House. Prior to that, I served as the chairman of the Currituck Board of Commissioners. A little bit about my background. I served as the chairman of the Workforce Development Board for the Albemarle Commission for 4 years. I served as the vice chair of the Currituck Chamber of Commerce. I'm a small business owner. I've started two good businesses here in Currituck, Dare County. I sold one of them in 2015. I'm an Army veteran. I'm a product of a military family. I grew up in a military family. My father was a career Navy, retired Master Chief. And that's a little bit of my background. I'm happy to talk as much about it as you would like.
Bobby, what do you consider the main issues of Eastern North Carolina that you want to bring to Washington?
Okay, so the main issues of Eastern North Carolina are the everyday issues. You know, Eastern North Carolina for a long time has really been neglected, you know, by our congressmen. You know, we haven't had representation for decades in CD1, and it's time for that to change. You know, going to the federal level, for me personally and for Eastern North Carolina, it's about job creation. It's about improving our economy. It's about our public safety. It's about border security. You know, I have a myriad of issues, issues that I feel that need to be addressed on a local level, that I've already started working on at the federal level. Our coastal issues, you know, we have a lot of issues here along the East North Carolina coast, and it takes a lot of federal help for us to get these things done. You know, we've made some progress, but me being in Washington is an opportunity that is an opportunity we haven't had in a long time. And the reason being is that having three Republican congressmen in Eastern North Carolina all working together to solve all of these issues that we have is truly the opportunity that that we've never had before. The issues are many. As we know, we have a lot of low wealth counties in CD1, especially. You know, our farmers have been struggling for years. I've been talking at length with our USDA folks on, you know, on the farming issues, and we've got some great ideas moving forward, some tough decisions to be made. But you know, that's what I'm here for, to make the tough decisions and you know, move Eastern North Carolina forward.
Bobby, on the farming issues, I was reading something, actually it was yesterday or the day before, about the cotton fields and that the farmers in Eastern North Carolina, they're sort of the worst business model. The faster I go, the more I lose. That they're not able to make a profit in growing cotton because of the foreign cotton is just undermining.
That's correct. That the foreign cotton is undermining them, and I would say cotton has probably been hit the worst out of our entire farming community, with timber being second. We have to level the playing field. I think, you know, Trump's doing what he can to level that playing field, but we also have to increase our export markets. So you know, we're a long way from even being close to equal, and we've allowed that to happen over the years, and we have to pull it back. More products are made here in America, and that's the difficulty that the farmers are having is so many things are made overseas. And you know, as you all know, you know, we're bringing as much manufacturing back to the United States as we can. And that's just one more of the items that we have to get back here so we can help our cotton farmers. They have been unbelievably struck hard for the last 4 years, maybe 5 years.
Bobby, what do you think was the most important thing that you've done while you've been serving in the North Carolina legislature?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Okay, so I'm going to go the long way to answer this. So in my time in the General Assembly, I'm going on my eighth year at the General Assembly. I have passed countless legislation to help Eastern North Carolina, to help the state of North Carolina. I have helped obtain hundreds of millions of dollars in appropriations for Eastern North Carolina. I've helped our community colleges. I have worked tirelessly to lower healthcare costs, to lower prescription costs. I've been a huge advocate and a sponsor of the PBM bill, which is the pharmacy benefits managers bill, to stop these pharmacies from taking advantage of us. I've done so many things for the military, I was a sponsor of the bill that eliminated the state income tax on their retirement. A myriad of things I've done in my time here at the General Assembly, and what an opportunity, right? But the thing I'm most proud of, and it's the reason that I got into politics, is my constituent services. I never dreamt of being a politician. It wasn't anything in my wheelhouse. I have a 12th grade education. I'm a high school graduate. It wasn't easy getting to that point, I can promise you. So I had an issue and I contacted my commissioners, a couple of them, and I couldn't get any help with the issue that I had. It was an issue with the fire marshal. So I ended up fighting fire marshal all the way to the state level and, you know, I was right, you know, so I won my issue. And it was maybe about a year, maybe close to a year after I sold one of my businesses to slow down, by the way. you know, to maybe take it a little easy. And I was talking with someone about it, and they said, you know, you would be a great county commissioner. You know, you're well respected in the community, and you know, we just think you'd be good at it. So you ought to look into it and give it a shot. So I did. And you know, what I was talking about was I couldn't get help. So what's been the most important to me is making sure that my constituents don't experience what I experienced. And I am so proud of our record. And I say our record because I don't do it alone. You know, I've got an assistant in Raleigh and, you know, we tag team things and I count on other people to help us. And that's the most, there's nothing I'm more proud of than my constituent services. That is the most important thing. And I think politicians lose the fact that that's what they're there for. You know, they're there to serve their constituents. They're not there to serve themselves or anybody else.
As we've seen, Bobby, or even we've seen where you're not there to serve your party. I realize the party has a platform, but you're going to stand up for your constituents.
Absolutely. They've always come first. You know, when I look at a piece of legislation, the first thing I think is it constitutional? And then the second thing I think is does it help or hurt my constituents? And the last thing I think about is my party. And most of what we do in Raleigh, unfortunately, is we play defense. Especially here in our coastal communities, you know, we have a lot to offer the state, and they're constantly coming after it. We have a great tax base, in our oceanfront communities. You know, they come after our tax money, our occupancy tax. This year they tried to toll the ferry system, and the whole thing with the trawl ban, trying to ban the whole shrimping industry in the state of North Carolina. And those are things that I have to fight against. I don't care who's in leadership or what role I'm in. If he's coming after my people, they're going to leave with a scar. I'm going to fight tooth and nail for them. I always have. I think I've demonstrated that in my time at the General Assembly, not just this last year, but throughout my whole time. When someone's being wronged, and I don't care what party they're in, who they are, or what they do, they're my people. And, I just can't put up with it. So that's what I do.
Quick question, Bobby. How many counties in North Carolina are in District 1?
25 counties. So we have 23 complete counties, and we have two counties that just have one small district in them. That would be one small district in Onslow and one small district in Granville counties.
Okay. And by the way, I was asked that question from my son-in-law, who happens to live in Onslow and in that little division. Yes.
Right. In Swan Quarter. Swansboro.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Swan Quarter is in my district now, in Hyde County.
Yeah. Right. Just a quick heads up. We have just about a minute to go before we take a break.
Okay.
Anybody have a quick question? Oh, then nobody wants to. You know, I'm going to hold on to Shrimpgate for the next segment, okay, if you don't mind.
Oh, no worries. Whatever you want me to do. Appreciate your time.
I'm just curious. What business were you in before you became a legislator?
Okay, so I currently own a business. It's Hannick Services, and I have three businesses under that umbrella. I have a company I have a pool company, I have a home maintenance business, and I have a cabana service where we do cabana chairs and umbrellas in the summertime. I owned a property management company, vacation rentals in Duck and Corolla area. I started that in 2004 with a partner, and I sold that in 2015.
Wow.
Very good. But on that, I think we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call. We will be back.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said E70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at E70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms. New guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at E70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If E70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, E70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than E70 Pond. Of course, E70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. E70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, Bobby, we had Bob Brinson on not too long ago, and we were talking about Shrimpgate, and he mentioned how hard you had fought for that, and he mentioned that you're the first one to get there and the last one to leave, that you're a really hard worker and that you work long hours, and I think that says a lot about your dedication to what you're doing.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so he is telling the truth. I've always been an early riser. I've always felt that the effort that you put into something is 75% of what you're doing. So like I said, I give everything I've got 120% no matter what I'm doing. I keep my camper at the state fairgrounds in Raleigh they've got a little campground over there. And I generally get to the building somewhere between 3 and maybe 4:30 in the morning.
Good Lord.
And, you know, I come in from the, you know, from the fairgrounds, and, you know, I'm on Jones Street, right, you know, where the big emblem is, you know, out front, and, you know, there's no traffic. So I stop there every morning. Right. I stop there every morning, and, you know, folks that know me and follow me on Facebook know that, you know, I'll take a picture and say it's going to be a great day at the GA. So I stop there every morning. You know, I look at the Capitol, I look at the emblem, I look at the flags flying, then I look to the right, and it's the malls there, and then the old Capitol's at the end of the mall. It's all lit up. It's just amazing, right? And, you know, it sounds a little sappy, I guess, but it's true. I look at that, and I just think to myself, and it doesn't get lost on me any day that I've been in the General Assembly. You know, I'm one of 50 senators that get to serve 11 million people, almost 12 million people. That's remarkable to me. And what an opportunity and what a privilege it is. And, I know I alluded to it earlier, but, you know, so many people go up there and they forget that. They forget why they're there and what a privilege and an honor it is to do it. And, you know, people ask me all the time, they're like, well, you know, how long do you think you'll stay into politics? And, to me, it's a simple answer. When I stop stopping. Because then I don't appreciate the fact that I get to do it. And I think if more politicians had that mentality, I think everyone would be in a whole lot better shape than we're in today. And, you know, I stand true to that. Obviously, I'm not in politics to make money with the salary that I make at the General Assembly. It's just a gift, and it's an unbelievable honor that I get to do it. It truly is.
Speaking of salary, don't you guys get about $12,000 a year or some ridiculous amount like that?
Yeah, it's about $13,800 a year.
Wow.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, you're making that money. You're in there, you know, on the graph.
Yeah, we're killing it. I made more as the chairman of the Board of Commissioners in Curitiba.
Bobby, I was just reading this morning that in Virginia, there's a little something tucked into their legislation to triple the salary of their General Assembly people, and I wonder what you thought about something like that.
Well, you know, our salaries were established, I think, in 1979 or 1976.
Wow.
And they have not been raised since. The thing with our per diem, you know, we get, I get a round trip. When we're in session, I get paid one round trip per week from my home to Raleigh and back. I serve 10 counties. I do not get mileage for all the travel that I do when I'm servicing all 10 of my counties. You know, whatever I do legislatively, I pay for it. Our per diem is $104 a day when we're in session. You know, the federal rate, I think, is $182 a day. We get paid 29 cents a mile, and the federal rate is 82 cents per mile. It is not a winning proposition to be a state senator or a House of Representatives, which is unfortunate because there's so many great folks out there that could do such an amazing job, but they have to stay home and work.
Yeah.
You know, it limits us to the people that can actually come to Raleigh and serve. If you don't live close to Raleigh, then you can't afford to serve.
True. Or if you don't have your own business.
Yes, ma'am. And even if you have your own business, you know, like I still manage my business. You know, I manage the day-to-day of my business. You know, thank goodness for cell phones and FaceTime and everything else, you know. And I've got some great folks that work for us and, you know, have been working for us for decades. So I'm very, very blessed. But it really limits the amount of people and the quality of people that we can get to serve in the General Assembly. So it's a problem, but the issue, and it's been talked about many times before, whoever's in power and you raise the salaries or even the per diem, you know, that's a tool that comes up in the election. Well, you know, he's just here to satisfy himself, you know, so it never happens. Leadership will never take it up. So it's just what it is. And, you know, quite frankly, I knew what the salary was when I went up there. So I don't really have anything to complain about.
No, it is just a shame that it has not been at least indexed for inflation, which would be quite a significant increase.
Yeah, yeah. And even the suggestion of, okay, it's 2026, let's make it effective 2030. You know, so if people know it's coming at least.
Yeah.
And it just never gets any traction. So.
One of the questions that you were asked on the questionnaire was, where do you see yourself 5 or 10 years in the future?
Right. So I'm going to get a little philosophical on that question. So, and this comes from my daughter, who was 27, who was a second grade teacher, who actually listened to at least one thing I told her along the way. When I was thinking about running for commissioner, I was like, you know, that's a big deal. And it's a lot of responsibility, right? And, you know, we talked about it, and, you know, we talked it through. And then, you know, 2 years later, I'm running for the House of Representatives, and we sat in the same room and had the same conversation. And my daughter said, you know, Dad, you've always told me that opportunities do not come along all the time in your lifetime. When an opportunity presents itself, you need to seize that opportunity, walk through the door, and see where it takes you. And that's been my political career. You know, those doors have continued to open for me. I've been unbelievably blessed, of course. A lot of it's from hard work. A lot of it's from, you know, doing the right thing, being with the right people, and just doing the best I can. So, you know, when the opportunity came up to run for Senate, Senate approached me and said, we think we can get the supermajority in the Senate. If you run for this seat that you probably won't win, but we have a chance. Will you do it? And I did it. So that door opened, I walked through it. This year with some battles that I fought in the Senate, I had some struggles and it was frustrating. Soon after that, you know, the opportunity to run for Congress came, and it's our time to run. It's my time to run for Congress. Politics is timing. I've walked through the door, and we're ready to take on this fight, and we're ready to turn CD1 red for the first time in 142 years.
Wow. Why?
And we're going to do that. So with that said, where am I 5 years from now? Hopefully I'm still in Congress, quite frankly.
Okay.
But you never know where life's going to take you. I never had this again, this wasn't an aspiration for me. I'm 61 years old. Give me 3 or 4 terms in Congress. you know, I'm pushing 70. You know, it's time to play golf again.
61 is not pushing 70.
No. I'm saying is you know, 5. You know, I was thinking more 5 terms. Not 5 years. So, you know, 2-year terms. So, yes, ma'am. Oh, I'm just a spring chicken. People are asking me, how are you doing all this running around you're doing and blah, blah, blah. So, are you kidding me? I feel like a 10-year-old.
Well, you don't sound 61.
No, you don't. Well,
why should we vote for you?
Why should you vote for me? Because I'm going to tell you right now, no one's going to work harder for Eastern North Carolina. I've proven that time and time again. My values are Eastern North Carolina values. Hard work, family, God, country. Everything that we stand for is what I fight for. I've proven that time and time again. No other candidate has done that. I've introduced legislation. I've passed legislation. I've sponsored it. I've co-sponsored it. I know the ins and outs of how to get it done. I have built the last 15 years of my life building a network in the state of North Carolina all the way up to Washington, D.C. I don't care what the issue is in Eastern North Carolina. I know how to tackle it. Because I've done it.
Bobby, comments that I've heard made about you is that you're a fighter. And I think I think that's one of the most important attributes of a Republican because we have so many spineless ones.
Yes, ma'am.
So that's what we need. We need a fighter who is dedicated to hard work and likes to win.
Yes, ma'am. So that's what I've done. You know, my first fight in the General Assembly was when the Letter Spawn bill came, you know, back in 2019. You know, they came after our people and I had to defend them. And we did a great job of defending and stopping that bill. When they tried, you know, when they told me they were going to expand Medicaid, I fought against that. You know, that was my first big fight in the Senate. And, you know, I went against leadership. And people have asked me, they said, well, what happened, you know, when you get to D.C. and you know, Mike Johnson or Donald Trump are, you know, urging you to do this and it hurts your people. I don't care who they are. They don't vote for me. They don't see me in the grocery store. The people I care about are Eastern North Carolina people. And I have proven time again, I will fight for them. Whether it's when they're trying to raise, you know, toll our ferries, which, oh, by the way, is a tax. I'm going to fight against that. And I did that this year, and I voted against my leadership. I was the only Republican to vote against the budget because it had a tax increase in it. Okay. And that's what I do. I'm going to fight, and I'm going to be vocal. If you want to talk about the trawl ban, don't get me started.
Okay.
You know, when it comes to a fight, I can't tell you how many people have called me up until 2 days ago. I had a call from someone that I knew before I was into politics, and they heard about this. They live in Delaware. They heard about this, and they're like, what is that all about? So they started listening to it, and he figured out that it was me that was fighting it. He didn't even know I was in politics.
Bobby,
and he was like, you have got to be kidding me.
On that one, we're going to use that as the teaser for the next segment. Right now, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. And yes, we're going to use that as the teaser.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. J. Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We're glad that you stayed with us. And we have as our guest, Bobby Hanig, Senator Bobby Hanig, who is running for the U.S. House of Representatives. And so, Bobby, right now, we wanted to do that teaser. Can you fill us in on Shrimpgate?
Okay. Do we have like 10 hours? What do we got?
Well, I know that you have a number of the people, well, at least three of us sitting at that table that were brought up to Raleigh to support you on that whole effort.
Were.
And
we
appreciate everything that you did to protect the coastal North Carolina.
So I'm going to start at the top with that. So people asked me what it was like, you know, to stand, you know, to sit through committee and to stand on the Senate floor for 442 and for 441. So 442 was the trawl ban, and 441 was the one where they're trying to buy out the shrimpers. So I knew from the very beginning, when I got that amendment, that this was going to be the most defining moment that I would ever have in the North Carolina Senate. I knew it was that big and that serious, because they were trying to wipe out an entire industry overnight. And I knew they had a plan. They were going to introduce this amendment to a very good bill that allowed people to catch fish. How crazy is that? As soon as I found, I was on my way to Raleigh on Monday. I sat in my office all night Monday. I did not leave my office on Monday. I spent the night there. I'd wake up thinking, well, I want to change this amendment. I want it to say this and say that. And I just worked tirelessly to make sure that I was ready for that committee meeting. I knew what the outcome was going to be, but my goal was to expose it for what it was. And what it was nothing but backroom, dirty politics at its very, very worst. Plain and simple. No two ways about it. So, you know, I had, I think four amendments that day in committee, and I knew that every one of them was going to get shot down. But every one of those amendments had a purpose. If you go back and listen to what those amendments are, they all had a purpose, and it was the purpose was to expose the issue. Of course, they all failed. It passed committee. Then it was coming to the Senate floor that evening. So that evening I had five more amendments, a couple of procedural things I was going to try. And of course I knew they would all get shot down with it. They would all get tabled. And people were like, well, how did you stand up on that Senate floor with the weight of the entire industry on your shoulders and just stand there and get shot down time after time after time? Like you were alone on an island. I've had so many people ask me that question. Well, what I tell them was, I start out with this. That trawl ban issue was the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire political career, without question. But it was also the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my entire political career. Spending 2 days on the floor with folks like y'all, listening to your stories, you know, I cleared my complete calendar for Tuesday and Wednesday, to battle this. And spending that time on the floor with y'all, hundreds and hundreds of people praying, laughing, joking. People hadn't seen each other. It was like a family reunion. The most amazing thing I've ever experienced, helping people get to where they needed to go, how to strategize, go see these people, who's on the fence, you know, the action, everything was just amazing. And it was amazing how everyone was so well-behaved and polite and courteous, and they had never seen anything like that before, ever. You know, we've had that many people in the building, but not for one issue. And this was a one-issue thing. And it was the most amazing experience, and it was exactly what government is, how government is supposed to work. When people are coming after you and you stand up and you win the day, that's incredible. You know, that to me, that's as good as it gets. So I wasn't alone is the point. You know, I had all these people in the building. I had tens of thousands of people listening in, all behind me, all propping me up. I was nowhere near alone. And I knew the outcome. And I knew that the very last thing that I could do after they voted on it, and only four people voted for it, myself, Senator Brinson, Senator Sanderson, and Senator Lazaro. The only thing that I could do to delay this and keep it from happening was to object to the third reading. What that did was, so procedurally, after you vote on it, it's during the second reading. Procedurally, what happened, immediately happens is they move to third reading without objection. Well, I objected. And you talk about some really pissed off people on the other side of that building that were staring at me, that I did that, because what that did was that delayed the process. And that's how we were able to get the House to get together to stop the trawl ban. Without that word objection, that would be in law today, because they were going to bring it in on a Tuesday. We were going to vote on it in the Senate. They were going to bring it to the House floor on Wednesday and send it to the governor on Wednesday afternoon. It was a plan. It was 100% choreographed, coordinated, whatever you want to say, so that we would not have time to build forces. And that's exactly what happened. And
so they were using Robert's rules and the procedures to push that through, and you interrupted with Robert's rules and the procedures.
That's correct. That's correct. And I can't tell you how many people, my colleagues came to me, because there was a lot of, you know, there's a lot more to it. You know, paraphrasing a bunch of it, but there was a lot more to it, and the back and forth, and all of my colleagues came to me and said, "Where did that come from? How did you know what to do this and to do that?" I said, "Man, I've been here for four terms, man. I've learned a little bit. I paid attention a time or two." And that's what it is. If you don't know the rules, you can't play the game. Well, they didn't like the fact that you know, I was beating them at their own game, because I can assure you that Senate rules are designed for Senate leadership to win. They're not designed to be fair. They're designed for whoever the Senate leadership is, whether they're Republican or Democrat, because when the Democrats were in power, their rules were set up the same way. They were set up for leadership to win. Something to the point of, when we're in a committee and we take a vote, it's only yes or nays, right? A's and nays, right? Well, if it's close, the chairman's always going to say, well, the ayes have it. And we can't take a hand vote. Like, we can't take a roll call vote in the Senate, but you can in the House. So if it's close and you call for a hand vote and he said the ayes have it, but when you do a hand vote and ayes don't have it, then that provision doesn't pass. We don't have that option in the Senate. So all of their rules, all the procedural things that happen, you know, when I try to, when I bring forth an amendment and, you know, someone will say that we'll bring forth a substitute amendment, which cancels out my amendment and brings it to their amendment. You know, those procedural things, right? So lots of things can happen on the floor, but you have to be ready for them. And quite frankly, I was ready for them. And, you know, understanding the ins and outs and how these things work is no different than being in Congress, because it's the same basic principles. You know, there are maneuvers, there are things you can do, there's procedures. And that's what I know how to do just from doing it so many times. I think I've introduced 278 bills in my career. I think 75 have been signed into law, which doesn't really seem like a lot, but it's a very high percentage in government.
Very good. Julie, you want to bring in?
I was thinking about the fact that you said you were ready for them, and it is incredible to me that after four terms, they didn't seem to be ready for you.
They weren't. They completely under what they did, and I've said this several times before, and I've been quoted on it before. This was the largest underestimation, yeah. Miscalculation that they have probably ever had, because they had no idea the forces they were going to run into when they tried to do this. And what it did and what it continues to do is to give the commercial fishermen a voice we've never had, because we're out working. You know, the people we fight are the CCA and the Wildlife Federation. These are all wealthy people. You know, they have the resources, they have the time. They can put into it whatever they want to put into it. Commercial fishermen don't have that option. So we've been able to tell our story ever since the trawl ban came around, like never before. They're making documentaries about it. You know, we form coalitions. We form a 19-county coalition that meets monthly in Carteret County. That I've been to every one of them. Movies are being made, podcasts, you name it. It's still out there. And I can assure you, they're paying attention. And you know, people say, well, do you think it's coming back? I said, I don't think they're going to make that mistake again for a long time.
No, it's sitting there. It's sitting there, but it's not going to come back. Yeah,
it is not going to come back. Yeah. It would be. I can't even imagine. You know, I don't know what word I want to use to say how bad that would be. but we have to keep that voice alive. We can't stop being vigilant. You know, it woke a lot of people up to how close we came to losing the entire industry.
Yeah.
Okay. On that, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers, and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters, and glad you're staying with us. We're just going to change hats for a short while. We still have everybody with us, and we're going to go on to Charlie. Ask your question.
Yes, I've noticed through news reports that Virginia has just elected a Democratic governor, and she is very anti-gun and has introduced some items that they want to ban, magazines that hold over 10 rounds, and they're also putting an additional tax on firearms purchases and maybe even ammunition, too. I'm not sure about that one. But that's going to hurt gun owners. And I was wondering, where do you stand on gun rights?
Well, from the time I knew what a gun was, I've always been an advocate. You know, the Second Amendment is not a privilege. It is a God-given right.
Amen.
You know, if we can't take arms against our government, then we are servants to our government. That's what it's designed for. I have been endorsed by the NRA, grassroots, whoever does endorsements, every year that I've been in the General Assembly, except for my first election. And I was running against a Republican incumbent. So my voting record speaks for itself. And I'm not 100% sure, but I think I have sponsored or co-sponsored every piece of legislation that is pro-Second Amendment from the time I was in the House to the time I was in the Senate. It is remarkable to me that someone says, well, you know, why do you need a 30-round clip? Well, because it's my right.
That's right.
Bottom line, there's nothing gray about your Second Amendment rights in the Constitution. Nothing at all.
No.
It's very clear. So you know, these folks in Virginia, you know, this gets back to show up for the election.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is what happens. So what's happening in Virginia is a wake up call to North Carolina. So when we have our general election next November, what the Republican Party needs to do is just point north. This is what's going to happen in North Carolina if you don't show up to vote. Your Second Amendment rights are in peril. Make no mistake, they're coming after it. They're coming after it hot and heavy. If we don't keep control of Congress and we don't keep control of the Senate, on the federal level, it'll be the swiftest backup we've ever seen in our history. What Donald Trump has done for this country in the last year will be wiped out in 30 days.
And by the way, Bob, you talked about that in the general election. I'm just going to encourage folks for the primary election. You've got to get the best candidates elected.
That's,
you've got to get everybody
correct.
Out of the House and to the polling.
That's right. It is not a popularity contest. Oh, well, you know, he's my friend. She's a nice lady or he's a nice guy. We don't care about that. This is not a popularity contest. This is not, you know, senior class president. This is about the fate of our country. And believe me, if we don't have the best candidate against Don Davis, which, again, I firmly believe that I am, I serve with Don Davis. Don Davis is very, very nervous that I win this primary. I promise you. I've served 15 of these 25 counties. So I know the district, and he knows that I know this district. And it isn't just the counties that I've served. It's the one, all of the coastal counties. I'm very well known for all the work that I've done on the coastal stuff. He is very nervous. And let me tell you something. If we don't win this seat, Don Davis is going to do two things in a row. He's going to elect Joaquin Jeffries to be the Speaker of the House, and then he is going to vote to impeach Donald Trump.
Yep.
And there go your Second Amendment rights. It is so critical.
Yes.
So critical.
Pat, you want to?
Yeah. I just wanted to comment. It always aggravates me when people say, well, I never vote in primaries. I only vote in the general election. And
right.
They don't seem to understand that you get to pick the candidate that will be on the ballot in the general. So if
right.
you only vote in the general, you've already ceded your ability to make sure that the candidate that you preferred
right.
is actually on the ballot.
Right.
And it points at an ignorance about what the purpose of the primary is.
Thank you so very much for saying that. So, again, the purpose of a primary is to vet the candidate. So what happened in the last election with our governor? We did not vet our candidate. What did we get? So I'm in a primary with four other candidates. In a primary, you would think that we all have the same basic values. So you have to determine who's going to be the best candidate and the best fit. Well, if you don't expose, you know, a weakness in a candidate or deficiency in a candidate, you can bet your butt that the Democrats will. So if you know, you want to run a positive campaign based on, you know, your achievements and what you bring to the table and why you're the best candidate. But if you don't help people understand or know and be honest about it, which, you know, again, is the difficult part, and be honest about it, then what's the purpose of a primary?
Well, and also my feeling about the general is now I only have one choice, and it's been made
right.
by other people. And I'd
that's
rather
correct.
Be part of the group that's making that decision.
Absolutely. You should want to be part of that process. I mean, you have every bit of control to vote to determine who your candidate is going to be.
Right. When I ran for office, I had a opponent in the primary, and whoever won the primary was going to be the sole name on the ballot for the general. And
right.
luckily, I won the primary. So, yeah, I have fond memories of that, and just increased my devotion to the value of primaries.
Right, right.
Okay, we had a next topic.
Next topic. We were going to talk about the Fed.
Which decided not to touch the interest rates.
Is that good or bad?
Well,
I think that... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I think it's bad. You go ahead and where you stand, Bobby.
I agree with you 100%. You know, so much. And, you know, I think it's bad because we were all anticipating a drop.
Well, it's also bad because I firmly believe that the Fed has been totally politicized and they will do
without question
anything they can do to prevent the Trump economy from reaching its full potential.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what the government shutdown is about also.
Yes, ma'am, it is. And and lowering those interest rates, you know, we talk about, and, you know, honestly, folks, I dislike this word so much I can't even tell you, affordability.
Yes.
So you can't even begin to talk about affordability with the way interest rates are. And interest rates are affecting everything that has to do with affordability.
One of our daughters is a real estate lawyer. And the difference that a quarter point of an interest rate makes on a mortgage with the current price of houses is amazing. And it can be the difference of whether a couple starting out with two incomes, working hard, working well, can even afford a basic house.
You know, I get a lot of calls, cold calls, from people asking me if I'm willing to sell my house. And all I tell them is I have a 2.25 mortgage. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
And there was an article I saw this morning about the migration within the United States. And they made the comment, particularly dealing with, for whatever reason, with the state of Illinois, because Illinois is one of the top five states losing people. But a lot of people are waiting another year because they don't want to sell their house and deal with the current interest rate.
Interest rate, right.
I'd like to
so it creates a stagnant market.
Right. Yes.
Glenn.
Which is terrible for everybody.
Go for it, Glenn.
Okay. I'd like to interject a couple of things. One, these interest rates may have some effect, but they're the short-term interest rates, and they don't directly move that market.
Right.
I mean,
right.
So I think sometimes we get off track on
that. Actually, it's the short-term, the U.S. refinancing our debt.
So I'm not saying there isn't some influence, but it's not a direct correlation. But I guess I've
I believe it's a trickle-down effect.
I believe that the perspective of people thought interest rates was going to drop. I don't think that was true at all. No one felt like this meeting was going to result in a drop in interest rate. Anybody out paying attention to the markets and stuff. But the biggest thing that I picked up, and it just happened before we come to this meeting or to this show, is that there apparently in comments was a bias towards now being more worried about inflation versus the labor market. And there's this index called Trueflation, which isn't backward-looking data, but forward-looking data, and that thing's dropping off like a cliff, and it's in the low ones.
Yeah.
And so it's really odd. They totally ignore, the Fed seems to totally ignore the forward-looking, and when you say you're going to move from a focus on inflation from the recent focus on labor, that's an indication you're definitely not going to lower rates, and you have the chance of increasing it more than reducing it.
The other part of this, too, is Jerome Powell will be out within the year. Am I correct? His term is up?
May, I think.
Yeah. And if he has not reduced interest rates by then, whoever comes in will reduce them. I have no doubt.
Yes, ma'am. And for me, it's... You alluded to it. For those people that are paying attention, well, you know, I believe that about 2% of the nation pays attention that deep. I'm not being smart about it. I'm being very honest. No different than the political bubble that we live in. It's a very small bubble. The everyday person, it's about consumer confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, hey man, you know, they dropped the interest rates. So, you know, that means, you know, shortly the home interest rates are going down. You know, people are a little bit more free with their cash or more free with their money. It helps the economy. But when people are I'm not saying that they were anticipating at, you know, this yesterday, but they're expecting the interest rate to go down this quarter because that's what was said last quarter.
Yeah.
Everybody said it. We expect the interest rates to fall in the first quarter of the year. Well, the first time we have an opportunity, they don't fall down. So it doesn't help consumer confidence. So people are supposed to be holding on to their money, which doesn't help the economy. It just all goes hand in hand.
Very good. You know. Okay. Bobby, I'm going to interrupt. I'm going to quick 10 seconds. I'm going to give you the last 15 seconds. 10 seconds. What are we going to do about the potential shutdown? Is there going to be a shutdown? Yes or no?
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Bobby, last 15 seconds. What do you want? Anything you want to say to close out?
You know, for me, again, it's what I do and the opportunities that I have are just amazing to me. I am so appreciative of so many people coming out for this election. It's been the most humbling thing I've ever experienced. So many people want to help, and it just comes from years of helping other people. It's amazing.
Thank you, Bobby. Thank you, Bobby. We really appreciate you being there. Again, CCTA is a 501c3. We can't endorse candidates, but we can have them on the air. Thank you again. Have a great week.